If there's an effort to get Trump and they want to get a conviction before the election, they move at lightning speed. And then they accuse the Trump side of trying to slow it down. That's not what's happening. What's happening is the other side is speeding it up. And in fact, Jack Smith has said that he thinks there is a public interest in making sure there's a trial before the election. No, there is not. There's a public interest in making sure there's a fair trial in the normal course of events when trials occur. Letitia James is now trying to turn herself from a really, really bad district attorney into a really bad landlord. I'd love to see what she would do with 40 Wall Street the Trump Towers. She would make them worthless. It's Alice in Wonderland justice. That is punishment first, trial only later.
All right, folks, welcome to the Sean Spicer Show. We are over halfway through the work week. I hope that you feel as like I do. I mean, we're ready. I'm ready already for the weekend. The warm weather is gone in D.C. I think we'll get back to it. I don't know, but I'm excited for spring, and every day we get a little closer to it. Yesterday, some interesting things happened on Capitol Hill. Let me break them down for you because we're going to get to Alan Dershowitz in just a little bit about so many things legal. The first thing I want to tell you about, you remember Isabel Brown. She was on the show the other day. She was talking to us about the issue of abortion. Obviously a big issue in this election, right? The Democrats are all in on this. This is the thing that they think is going to win it for them. So we talked about it. What did YouTube do? Well, they flagged it. They made sure that you understood what a bad, bad thing we were talking about. They made sure that right on the disclaimer on YouTube, it directed all of the users to the National Library of Medicine. I didn't even know there was a National Library of Medicine, but I'm not a big library goer. So, okay, maybe I didn't know that. And it explains to all of us that an abortion is a procedure to end a pregnancy. It can be done two different ways. Medication abortion, which uses medicines to end the pregnancy, sometimes called a medical abortion, or abortion with pills. Somehow they needed to flag this in case you were dumb enough not to know what it was. But I wonder if they do this to the left. They suppressed the video. It's one of the lowest viewed videos that we've ever had because they don't want you to hear the other side, right? The left can talk about it with reckless abandon. They could talk about abortion all day long. They can be proud, as the vice president was, to be the first person to visit an abortion clinic. But when we talk about it as an issue and what it means for young people, which is what Isabel Brown was doing, well, then God forbid we need to suppress that video because we can't let you think for yourselves. Is what YouTube thinks. You've got to make sure that we redirect you to some internet library so that you can read up on this before you are silly enough to think for yourself. It's amazing. This is what we're facing. I mean, we talk about tech suppression all the time. This is it. It's not just that they put labels all over stuff. It's that they make sure that that video can't be spread. Luckily, we're on the first. We're on Rumble, Apple, Spotify. That's why I always tell you, please subscribe. Because this time it's just a little bit of a suppressed video and a warning and a push to some library that you can read about something. But who knows what topics we're going to touch between now and November that they ultimately say, no, 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 no. This is Hunter Biden laptop 2.0 kind of stuff. We can't let you see that. Trust me, it's coming. We know it's coming. We've watched two cycles, Russia hoax, Hunter Biden's laptop, trying to get Trump now off ballots. They will go to whatever extremes they have to stop us from having a conversation. They don't want you to be informed. I mean, my goodness. I hate having this discussion as if it's a real, like, is it true that big tech suppresses conservative voices? Yes. Go find a video where they do this to anyone on the left. They were proud to go visit an abortion clinic, the first time in history, the White House said. And it went everywhere. We want to have a discussion about how this is going to affect young people voting with Isabel Brown. There was no discussion here of how to do something illegal or anything right. It was just purely how is this going to play as an issue? And boom, suppress it. Just keep that in mind. And that's why I always tell you, please subscribe and hit the notification button. If you're watching this on the first, you're great. But please still do it anyway. But if you're watching it on YouTube, go to Rumble, go to Apple, go to Spotify. Because I can't tell you. Same way I can't pick the Powerball numbers. I wish I could do that. But I can't do it. I can't tell you when it's going to happen, but I'm pretty certain something's going to happen one of these days. And if you're subscribed to the other platforms, you're safe. So, and it also helps us, like, just be, I'll be transparent about that. I really appreciate it. And I help. So if you don't listen to it on every platform, that's not what I'm asking you. If you want to keep listening on Rumble or YouTube or Apple, that's great. Please do it. But please go to the other platforms and subscribe. So if we were to get canceled or something, we can at least continue the conversation. So I mentioned a couple things on the Hill yesterday. Let me get to the first thing, and then I'll tell you about the second one. The first thing is General Milley and General McKenzie, the two folks basically responsible for Afghanistan, were on the Hill yesterday. And I actually was a little shocked. They didn't name names. They didn't say Antony Blinken. They didn't say the Secretary of Defense. They didn't say Joe Biden. But they said the Department of State and the Department of Defense. And well, it's pretty obvious who's leading those places. And it's pretty clear when they say the administration made a decision who the administration is. But General Milley was very clear that there have been horrible ramifications because of that failed withdrawal. And they were very clear about the options that they gave to the administration, what we would need to do. People's lives, I mean, he talked in very graphic terms about people who have been killed because they worked with the U.S., Afghan nationals that worked with us. Why the government folded so quick. Talked about that. But he also talked about, and this is the big thing for me, I know Trump loves to talk about all the weaponry. Again, where do you want to start on this list? But we gave up Bagram. Strategically, think about this. It's between China, Russia. I mean, it's in such a great strategic location. We spent almost $1 trillion over two decades, and we walk away. There's a level of stupidity that you can't make up here. And Biden is still bragging about this as an achievement. He thinks it's a success. Here's Milley, who's no friend of this of the Trump administration. And he did it in very diplomatic terms, this administration, and he used a lot of words that, you know, are very Department of Defense and Department of State speak. We continue down an opportunity path, whatever. But the bottom line is he was like, no, this is not what we recommended. And this was a strategic blunder, and people's lives suffered enormously because of it. And we made a massive blunder by leaving, not taking back Bagram. General McKenzie was like, we needed 2,500 minimum troops to stay. Not a tough price to pay to maintain that. We basically paid for it for two decades with blood and treasure and resources. And we walk away. The level of incompetence, there's nobody that thought that was a good idea. And Biden literally, from these internal meetings that get leaked out, still thinks that this was a badge of honor, something that he is proud that he did. 13 service members died. If that's not a bad enough thing, then I don't know what is. You look at the equipment, you look at the strategic aspect that we left by, as I said, giving up Bagram. The Taliban resurgence. The number of Afghan nationals that were killed because of this. Anyway, I can go on and on. If you're like me and you're looking to secure your financial future, I have the people for you to call. Call my friends at Bishop Gold Group at 844-984-1616 or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean and they will sit down with you, whether it's online or over the phone, and have a conversation with you about whether it's a 401k, an IRA that you might have sitting around, or just diversifying your investment strategies into precious metals, gold, silver, alike. There's a lot of buzz about these kind of groups, and I'm sure you're getting hit up by many of them. Bishop Gold Group are the people that I trust. I took my money, called them, had a conversation about how to diversify my investment strategy with precious metals. We came up with a strategy that made sense for me, and that's why I think if you want to do the same thing, you can call them. You can trust them. They know what they're talking about. They're full of integrity. And if you go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean, you can join me in diversifying your investment strategy with precious metals. Like I said, in these uncertain economic times, this is a great place to diversify your investment strategy. So join me, go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean, and you begin your journey with financial metals with a free promotional gift as well. I mentioned at the beginning of the week how it was like Groundhog Day. We were back here having another discussion about a government shutdown. A government shutdown over 2024 fiscal funding. So remember, we're getting ready now, the budget, both the president and the Congress, to fund fiscal year 2025. That starts October 1st of this year. We still haven't funded last year. 70% of the government, the Department of Homeland Security, Department of Defense, Department of State, have not been funded. We're on these little two-week little jumps. Funding. Funding runs in again Friday night. And House Speaker Johnson has told his conference that he's going to give him 72 hours to read the bill. So start doing the math. My guess is that we end up with a short-term government shutdown if they can pass it. So here's what he told the House Republican conference today that they got in this deal, because the big breakdown was about the border and Homeland Security. So he told his conference that Immigration and Customs, which currently were in the bill to have 34,000 beds, is up to 42,000. So you get 8,000 more beds to house people when they come in. 22,000 more border agents, 25% increase on border technology, 20% cut to non-governmental organizations. Troop pay increase that he said was the largest in 40 years for our service members. Cuts to the Pentagon's DEI programs, diversity, equity, and inclusion, cut them. Cut to DOD climate programs, no funding for one of the UN programs, 6% cut to foreign aid. And here's an interesting thing. The only flag that can be flown at diplomatic facilities will be in this bill as law, saying it must be the US flag. So no more of this trans flag flying, I guess, if this is what the law says. And it prevents the banning of gas stoves. Look, when you have divided government, and let's face it, we are on the short end of that math. We have the House, barely. The Senate is the Dems, and the White House is the Dems. Like, I'm sorry, I'd love more, but I think we're actually getting some pretty good wins. And if this holds true, commend Speaker Johnson for fighting for it. We'll see where things go. I will say one interesting thing. Remember, we talked about this. There's a two-seat majority that they have right now. Kevin McCarthy's replacement, last night they had this runoff in California. If he had gotten over 50%, he would have been sworn in. He would have gotten it, but he didn't. He came up short of that 50%. There's now going to be a runoff in two more months. Why does that matter? Well, it matters because it's going to be two more months before we can potentially add another Republican seat. It's two Republicans that went to the runoff. So we're guaranteed it, but it's going to take another 60 days that they have to play with two. And obviously, as we've seen, that one extra vote can be helpful. In Ohio last night, Trump, big win for all the endorsed candidates, including Bernie Moreno, massive win in that Senate primary. He'll take on Sherrod Brown, which is one of those top seats. Remember, Republicans are down two seats in the Senate. Joe Manchin is retiring. That West Virginia seat is an automatic pickup. It's a guarantee. So we're now at parity going into the next Congress. The question is, do you get an outright majority because you either win the presidency and the vice president is there, or you can actually pick up some additional seats, assuming you lose none? I assume we keep Florida in particular. I assume we keep Texas. But we now have an opportunity to pick up, whether that's Montana, Nevada, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania. There's a lot. And we only, I mean, I'd love to win them all, but let's face it, we pick up that Sherrod Brown seat, and where Trump has won convincingly in Ohio, Bernie Moreno becomes the next person. That puts us over the threshold. Why is this important? Just to be clear, well, as I've said before, Trump's nominations. That's where you're going to get the nominations. This is critical. So understand that picking up those seats, and if we don't, let's say it's a 50-50 deal. Let's say it's a 51-seat deal. Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, they're going to have a ton. They're going to be the new Joe Manchin. I don't like this person. Will you send us a new nominee? I don't like this bill. If we can get to 53, 54, and I think it's doable, he actually can get through that agenda and not have all of these people, all of his nominees, all of his agenda held hostage by Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, et cetera, et cetera. So these Senate races, as I said, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, where Carrie Lake's running, that would be another pickup. Nevada, a pickup. Montana, a pickup. West Virginia, a pickup. We can get these. I think we're in great shape. So we'll keep an eye on the Senate going forward, but it was a good night last night for President Trump. We're going to talk to Alan Dershowitz, as I said, in just a few minutes. I have a lot to get to him, as you can imagine. These Trump cases I want to talk to him about. Trump's on offense. He's suing ABC. I'll tell you about that in a minute, and I explain why this is important. Obviously, Peter Navarro going to jail. So many things that we can possibly talk to him about. But there's one thing before we get to it that I want to ask him about. I want to play you this video. Maybe you've seen this, but it keeps coming up in the news. This issue of squatting. Let me show you the clip of what I'm talking about.
here. This guy just forced himself into my house.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't.
And so did you.
Ma'am.
You broke through the front door.
Officer.
The man called the police on her.
So why is it that I have to leave and he doesn't have to leave?
Because technically he can't be kicked out. You need to go to court.
They consider this a landlord-tenant issue.
Adele, you're getting arrested right now?
I'm being arrested.
For what?
For being in my own home.
And where's your lease?
She's fighting the house. It's not her house anymore.
My deed is current and legal.
Arrested for unlawful eviction. She changed the locks on a man who claims he lives there.
This is the homeowner. She's being arrested. Okay, so she inherits a house, okay, from her parents who passed away. It's worth $1 million. She says, I want to sell it. What happens? She goes in to sell it. There's people living in it. Squatters. They're living in her house that she owns. She has the deed and the title. But under New York law, well, they're treated like renters. So she went in to change the lock and the squatters called the cops. And this isn't just New York. I've seen 3 or 4 stories this week about this. This is insane. But I want to ask Alan Dershowitz about this. How prevalent is this? What can you do as a homeowner? Can you imagine this? What if it's your rental home or a shared family place or whatever, right? You go in and there's some people living in there and they say, sorry, you get out. We're going to have you arrested, the owner. You have the title, the deed, but that doesn't matter. You have to treat us like renters. Crazy. All right. As I said, a lot to break into with Alan Dershowitz. Before we get to that, as you guys know, there are some amazing sponsors that I talk about every day that help us bring you this show absolutely free on all these platforms. I want to tell you about 2 of them right now that are great friends of the show that help us bring you this show every day for free. If you're a longtime watcher of the show, you know about my friend Leo Grillo. Leo is the founder of Delta Rescue, and you can see a lot of the work they do at deltarescue.org. Leo started his journey by rescuing a Doberman. He named the Doberman Delta, which stands for dedication and everlasting love to animals. That became part of a lifelong mission. He founded Delta Rescue. It's a lifelong no-kill sanctuary, not a shelter, a no-kill sanctuary where dogs, cats, horses can roam freely and get the nutrition and veterinary care that they need. It's all supported by people like you and me through our contributions, $5, $10, $100, $1,000. Whatever you can do, if you're an animal lover, helps keep Delta Rescue going. And if you go to deltarescue.org, you can see some of the amazing videos of the work that they do. But also at deltarescue.org is the estate planning kit. If you can help make Delta Rescue part of your estate, that'll make Leo's mission an enduring one, one that continues well beyond all of us and the here and the now. So if you're an animal lover, please go to deltarescue.org, help in the short term with a contribution, but then also make it part of your estate planning kit. When things go south and there's a crisis, whether it's for a day, a week, a month, maybe even months, will you be ready? I am. Because I got the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. And if you go to 4patriots.com/Spicer, you can join me in getting one of these. The best part about the Patriot Power Generator 2000X is that when something happens, you lose power for whatever reason. Maybe it's an attack on the grid. Maybe it's a natural disaster, whatever. You will be ready. You can plug in your refrigerator, your tablets, your medical devices, your computer, your phones, so that you, your family, and your loved ones are taken care of during a crisis. Think about how important that is. Here's what makes the Patriot Power Generator 2000X different. It runs off solar power and the panels come free with it. You put it out, it charges the generator. Then when you bring the Patriot Power Generator into your house, there's no fumes, there's no noise. You plug into one of the several ports that exist and you can bring it back outside. No gas, no smells, no fumes, no additional things to do. This is securing your future for you, your family, your friends. Go to 4patriots.com/Spicer and join me by getting a Patriot Power Generator 2000X to be ready when emergencies occur. Let's bring in the author of Get Trump and the War Against the Jews, Professor Emeritus at Harvard Law School, and the person that I would want as my professor if I ever could take a law school degree, Alan Dershowitz. Professor, always good to see you. A lot to get to on the political front, but something that's caught my eye, and I just show the viewers that I mean, obviously this maybe doesn't rise to the level of Alan Dershowitz, but I keep seeing these stories. Fox had one on this morning. The local news had another one where people who own a house have the deed and title, are going in to their own, to a home that they own legally outright, and there are squatters in there. And in this case in New York, the police arrested the homeowner for going into a home that she owns and saying the squatter has rights as a renter because they've been there and that they need to go to court and to evict the squatter. I just don't understand what's going on in the law where if I own a house, someone walks into it illegal, I would assume that's called trespassing if you're in there, and then tells me I have to get out until I can prove that they can't be there.
This is what's called woke law. It's not statutory law. It's not customary law. It's woke law of the left that puts the squatter who is engaged in illegal trespassing at a higher status than the owner. Do you know, when our country was established, we originally, in the Declaration of Independence, we didn't say life, liberty, and happiness. The original phrase was life, liberty, and property. Property was regarded as one of the essential elements of liberty. And the framers would be turning over in their graves if they saw that property rights were being devalued in this way and the interests of squatters placed over property owners. You don't have to be a capitalist. You don't have to be somebody who is right wing to support the right of people to do with their property as they choose. And that includes to exclude squatters. So I would think that if this case, if these cases get to higher courts, they would understand that the fundamental right of property is a constitutional right. It's not merely a right that people think they have because it sounds right. It's constitutional.
Aren't we, though, starting to blur the line between trespassing and squatting? If I walk into your house, sit on a couch without you opening the door or inviting me in there, aren't I trespassing and therefore I'm the person breaking the law? Whereas in this instance, the squatter is calling the police, asking them to arrest the actual owner, saying they have a right to be there. And I guess, Mike, you know, that blurring is what scares me. What's to prevent? I mean, that's breaking and entering, trespassing. Those are laws that are meant to prevent somebody from coming in your house. These squatting laws seem to encourage somebody to come into your house.
Well, you know, there's an old law that goes back really to before we were established that if there's a piece of property, an empty piece of property, a piece of land, and somebody walks through it for 17 years, I think it was, or something like that, without objection from the owner, and the owner knows that they're doing it, that they have the right to continue to use that pathway. But when the owner doesn't know, the owner hasn't consented, there's no basis in morality and law and constitutionality for shifting essentially the ownership from the person who paid for it to the person who went there and took it over by trespass. So I would think that wiser minds would ultimately prevail in a case, in cases like this.
All right. As I mentioned at the outset, you've written one of the 550,000 books that you've written, Get Trump. It talks about Trump getting out of these cases. You make a very compelling case. Not only that, but you actually preview and correctly predict it in so many cases. But one that you may not have gotten is Trump going on the offense. Trump actually sued ABC and George Stephanopoulos this week. This is based off an interview that he did with Nancy Mace on ABC's Sunday show this week. Let me just play the exchange for you here.
Yes, this morning. And you've endorsed Donald Trump for president. Mm-hmm. Judges and two separate juries have found him liable for rape and for defaming the victim of that rape. How do you square your endorsement of Donald Trump with the testimony we just saw?
So let's be clear. Everything I know is that President Trump wasn't found, and even though it was a civil, not a criminal case, it's still, he was not found guilty in any scenario of rape. It was sexual assault. That's a difference. Walk me through the chances of Trump's case from ABC and against George Stephanopoulos.
Well, it's much stronger than that. Not only did the jury not find him guilty of rape, they found him essentially not liable for rape. They made a sharp distinction between rape and sexual assault. In other words, the way I interpreted, they said that the alleged victim lied about being penetrated. I don't want to get too specific, but didn't lie about being touched inappropriately. There's an enormous difference between rape and assault. Assault can be literally touching momentarily without consent. And Stephanopoulos had to know that, and his producers had to know that. And he's going to win the first half of the suit. There are two halves of a suit like this. Number one, you have to prove you were defamed. He was defamed, without a doubt. They were wrong. He was defamed. Then, because he's a public figure, he has to prove that George Stephanopoulos or ABC engaged in malice, that is, reckless disregard for the truth. And he may lose on that. Remember, I have a case against CNN. When I defended President Trump, I said he could be impeached if he committed criminal-type behavior, treason, bribery, extortion, anything like that. And the irresponsible journalists on CNN said, oh, Dershowitz said he could kill somebody, he could bribe somebody. And the judge made a finding that I said nothing of the sort, that they were completely wrong. But then he found that I couldn't prove malice because I couldn't prove by a strong and convincing evidence, clear and convincing evidence, that they did it deliberately and willfully. So I have a case now pending in the courts where I'm seeking a change in the rules regarding a malice. In fact, I was a law clerk in 1963-64 when New York Times versus Sullivan was decided. But now I think that the rules regarding malice have to change because people like me and Donald Trump, we can't prove what was in the minds of these people. All we can prove is what disastrous mistakes they made. The judge in my case found them to be stupid and unprofessional and irresponsible and wrong, but not malicious. That makes no sense. So I hope Trump.
Okay. So in your case, because I get that, he's a public figure and there's this higher standard. In your case, I trust the legal mind of Alan Dershowitz to solve Alan Dershowitz's case because I know how good you are at this. In his case, though, Nancy Mace went back at him and said, no, he actually wasn't. So she's correcting him and he doubled down. Does that matter? I mean, this gets to your malice point. He knows he's being corrected on air and still is defiant and said, no, it's rape and you're justifying it.
Yeah. Well, here's what's going to happen. He'll file the complaint as he has. They'll move to dismiss. Hopefully, the motion to dismiss will be denied. Then there'll be discovery. And we'll see what his script said. We'll see what his producers said. We'll see all the emails to him. We'll see what research Stephanopoulos did in order to come to the erroneous conclusion that Trump was found liable for rape. And the evidence will determine whether there's enough to establish malice. But I think the court should look hard at the malice argument now and say that if the evidence is, if, particularly when you have professional journalists like CNN and ABC, they ought to be held to a higher standard. It's public versus public figure. Why should they get the advantage here? And I think the courts ultimately will make it easier to sue when it's so obvious that they deliberately and willfully try to destroy somebody because they don't like them. In my case, they clearly had as a goal to try to discredit me and saying that I said a president can kill when I said exactly the opposite. And the judge found that I didn't say anything like that. So I think the law of malice is changing. And I think Donald Trump, I should be in touch with his lawyers or his lawyers should be in touch with me because we have the same issue and we've done all the briefs and we've done a darn good brief on this issue. So they may be interested in seeing our brief.
All right. Well, he watches the show, so we'll get him a copy of that because I think it's important. I do think this is what kills me is that in your case, you're absolutely right, or in Stephanopoulos' case, I've had multiple issues myself, right? Where they'll lie and say that I said something and I'll go, no, here's the transcript. Well, you meant this or, you know, and it's like, no, if I didn't say it, you can't say I said it because you're trying to do something to provoke a response from the viewer of some sort. And you know what's right.
The way we understood it. Well, that's not the criteria the way we understood it.
Right.
It's what a person would believe hearing that he was accused and found liable for rape. He wasn't. In fact, as I say, it was the opposite. He was found not liable for rape.
I do get a kick because if you ever say anything about any of these folks, the George Stephanopoulos's, the Jake Tappers, Chuck Todd, they've got the thinnest skin of anyone I've ever met in my life. If you ever, ever say something about them, they will freak out. And it's funny how they don't mind treating somebody else one way in terms of the what they accuse them of and what you could possibly say about them and their jobs. It's they have a very different view of the First Amendment when it comes to how they should be treated.
It's the for me, but not for thee. That's their right. attitude. Without a
so,
doubt.
So if I can, the discovery that you point out to me is always the interesting thing. That will give Donald Trump's team, as you point out, the ability to say, well, look, the researcher, the producer, the sent a note and saying, here's what he was accused of, and Stephanopoulos changed the script or whatever, right? But it also goes the other way, right? If, as far as I know, and I'm asking you, meaning that they, ABC, will have discovery of Donald Trump. And wouldn't that worry him that he might have sent a note to somebody that said, I can't believe I got off on this or I did this? And do they have something to be worried about on their end because of what ABC might have access to?
Everybody always has something to worry about with a deposition. That they found absolutely nothing in my instance. I don't know what they'd find there, but it seems to me it's very clear here. It doesn't matter what Trump thought or what Trump believed or what Trump said. The point is there is a verdict in the case. And the verdict in the case is public record. Anybody could get access to it. And it says that they did not find him liable for rape, only for sexual assault. And therefore, you can't say he was found liable for rape.
Okay, last question on this part. How quick does, I mean, we're obsessed with the Trump cases and how quick they're moving. How quick does a case like this move? Will we have a verdict by the election?
Well, let's be very clear about it. And I say this in my book, Get Trump. If there's an effort to get Trump and they want to get a conviction before the election, they move at lightning speed. And then they accuse the Trump side of trying to slow it down. That's not what's happening. What's happening is the other side is speeding it up. And in fact, Jack Smith has said that he thinks there is a public interest in making sure there's a trial before the election. No, there is not. There's a public interest in making sure there's a fair trial in the normal course of events when trials occur. And that takes time. And Trump's lawsuit will take time. It has to go in several stages. Number one, he will file. They will make a motion to dismiss. Hopefully that will be denied. I think it should be denied. There'll then be discovery. There'll then be a motion for summary judgment, and then it'll be set for trial. And in my case, I withstood the motion for dismiss. The judge didn't dismiss it. The judge said I had filed a valid claim. But then after discovery on summary judgment, he said I hadn't proved by clear and convincing evidence that they had the malice. We're challenging that.
All right, so let's move on to the cases that are you addressed in the book, Get Trump. This one that's, I think, kind of at the forefront now, it isn't criminal, but it's the Letitia James case in New York where they've gone after him. He's obviously appealing the verdict, which is about $500 million and growing at, my understanding, is about $100,000 a day in penalties. He tried to put up a bond. And I've never put up a bond. I don't own billions of dollars in property, so I don't know what it would take to do that. But his lawyer argued in court the other day that they haven't been able to find in the 30 people or however you do this, that they can't find someone to secure. Letitia James is now saying she may start to seize property. Okay. And on the news, at least, they're saying that could mean Mar-a-Lago. That could mean his plane. That could mean Trump Tower, 40 Wall Street. Explain where this goes from here and how much latitude she has. Can she just willy-nilly say, great, I'm taking your plane, I'm taking Trump Tower? Or I know in some states, like your residence can't be part of a bankruptcy. Or so is that true of Mar-a-Lago and Trump Tower? What are the guardrails that we're going to be looking for in the next couple of weeks?
Well, Letitia James is now trying to turn herself from a really, really bad district attorney into a really bad landlord. I'd love to see what she would do with 40 Wall Street and the Trump Towers. She would make them worthless. And then if Trump wins, he gets nothing back, which really effectively denies him the right to appeal.
Wait, just stop. I apologize. When you say he gets nothing back, this is important, and I just don't want to gloss over this. So he's appealing. She's saying, I want these assets now, right? So let's say that just happens. When you say he gets something back, she takes 40 Wall Street. Let's just pick that one. And she is horrible. So it starts to devalue. When it's over, if he won the appeal, what is he entitled to? The asset, how much they sell it for? What would he get back, if anything?
Probably the asset as it was valued after Letitia James destroyed its value. And so he would end up losing a lot. indeed it was to be fair, you'd want the state to put up a bond as well to make sure that the value of the asset isn't diminished. This whole thing is absurd. You can't move a building. And so there's no doubt that if he loses the appeal, they can go after his asset then. There's no reason why they should have the right to go after his assets now before the appeal is over. It's like Navarro being put in jail before his appeal. Where does he go to get back his years or his months? He's an old man. I know what every day means. I'm 85 years old. I don't want somebody to take, 4 months of my life. And then if I win the case, I'm sorry, but you can't have your 4 months back. God has taken that. And it was absurd to put Navarro in prison for the until his appeal is decided. And it's absurd. It's Alice in Wonderland justice. That is punishment first, trial only later.
All right, let's get back to Peter Navarro in a second, because I have actually gotten a couple questions on this. And what you've hit on is so important on the asset. So Letitia James, let's just claim that 40 Wall Street, because we keep saying it, is the asset. And she says it's worth $500 million, just to keep this easy. And so she seizes that now while he's appealing. He appeals, he wins. The asset goes from, $450 million to $300 million. And she says, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Trump, you won. So here's your asset back, or here's the proceeds of the sale back. This is what I think viewers need to understand. He then wins his case, but he lost, let's say sold for $300 million. He loses $150 million. Is that right? I mean, like, there's no recourse for him now, right?
And he also loses the interest, the penalties, much of the... and so what we're seeing here is a rush to judgment. They want to get Trump even before the courts say you can get Trump. Look, I'm generally right about my predictions. One of my is that the court will ultimately reduce the fine from $450 million. It's cruel and unusual punishment. It's an excessive fine under the Eighth Amendment, and it's unconstitutional in my view. But even if it isn't under New York law, there's no damage here. Nobody is hurt. That figure is made up out of whole cloth. It was designed to say this is what he benefited, but he didn't benefit from that, because if the bank didn't lend him, he would have gone to another bank and he would have made his own terms. So it's a made up figure. And I think the courts will, if the courts are fair, will reduce the amount of the fine. And therefore, he will have lost already the interest. He will have lost the value of the buildings, the use of the buildings. And that shouldn't happen, just the way Peter Navarro shouldn't lose his freedom. That's obviously more important, freedom than money, until the resolution of the case is over. And remember, too, this is not a lawsuit between private people where you can say, well, it belongs to one person or the other, so it might as well go to the other person. This is the state. This is the government. They shouldn't be taking a person's property until the appeal has finally been resolved.
You know what? The wheels are turning in my head. I have an idea. And let's brainstorm this. What if we take the first question I asked you and tie it to this question, and Trump just goes and squats in his assets, and then they have to convict him, right? Maybe that's the answer, is that he says, okay, under New York law, I'm now a squatter and you can't kick me out of the building.
Trump squatting would be even more widespread than the Trump mugshot. Trump on a t-shirt squatting in his own apartment or his own Wall Street or Trump Tower. I love that image.
All right. No, just, you know, we'll do this after the show and see if we could figure out a way to monetize this. Just real quick, I want to ask you about Peter Navarro specifically, but before you do that, do you think that Trump says, I can't find anyone to secure the bond, because I guess not a ton of people secure $500 million or $500 million. But if he doesn't, and he doesn't put up something, do you just think prediction wise, because as you said, your predictions are pretty spot on, does she start seizing assets?
Well, I don't think she'll actually do that. I think there's possibly a way of putting the assets in some kind of an escrow, where he continues to operate it, but he can't sell it or something like that. There are so many possible routes to protecting the state's interest short of the punitive route of taking it away from him. But, she's out to be reelected. Everybody's elected. Fannie Willis is out to be reelected. The judge who wrote that absurd decision disqualifying Nathan Wade, but not Fannie Willis. He's up for re-election. Letitia James is going to be up for re-election. This is all about politics. Donald Trump is up for re-election. This is all about politics, and politics is destroying our legal system. Our legal system is supposed to be above politics, outside of politics. And Alexander Hamilton warned that the greatest danger is to politicize our legal system. And that's exactly what's happening on both sides. The effort to impeach Biden, which is now being dropped, but by the Republicans. That's tit for tat. Hey,
yes, it is.
You criminalized us. We're going to criminalize you. Let's get back to reserving the criminal justice system and the legal system generally to malefactors, to people who do wrong, people who commit actual crimes, not to try to even the score politically.
I mean, you know, it is funny, though. You think about this. We're going after Trump for all this stuff. And then you and I started this conversation by people who literally break into somebody's house, trespass in it, have the legal right to squat. You're absolutely right when it comes to how the legal system is working. You break the law, you trespass, you enter someone's law, you call the police on them. And now you can go after Trump for all this. Like, we are in upside down world.
No, you missed the most important point. Donald Trump had an option, according to your theory. On January 20th of 2021, he just should have stayed in the White House. He should have said, hey, I've been here 4 years now. I'm a squatter. You can't get rid of me. Instead of election denial, he becomes a squatter. And then to get him out of the White House.
Oh, we're on to something big here. Wait till the Trump campaign hears this. They're going to start saying he's not an election denier. He's a squatter. The last thing I want to touch on, this literally stays with this, is this Peter Navarro thing that you bring up. So here's what I don't understand. Steve Bannon was convicted of the same thing. He is out pending appeal, hosting War Room every day. Hunter Biden said he didn't want to show up for a hearing. He's fine or free, apparently. Several people have disputed whether or not they should show. I mean, there's been attorney generals in the past, Holder, I believe, who didn't show up for a congressional subpoena. What is going on that somehow Peter Navarro needs to go to jail for 4 months because he's doing something that everybody else has done? And again, I'm not for breaking the law or defying subpoenas. Joe Biden's the guy who said you should abide by subpoenas. But why is Peter Navarro, what is so unique about his case that he's going to serve 4 months?
There's nothing unique about it. I don't see any difference between his case and these other cases, except that he's 75 years old or whatever he is, and he shouldn't be going to jail. He has plenty of time to go to jail if he loses the appeal. But where does he go to get back the 4 months if he wins the appeal? He's not a flight risk. He's not running away anywhere. He's not a danger. He's not a criminal who's going to go out and kill somebody. Those are the two essential criteria. He's not going to tamper with witnesses. The case is over. The trial's over. It's an appeal. It's just gratuitous punishment before an appeal, and it's wrong. It's, as I said, in Alice in Wonderland, the Queen has this argument with Alice saying, wouldn't it be better to punish people even before they're tried? And that's the kind of injustice that we hope our Constitution was designed to prevent. But Navarro was fallen victim to that.
You look at these guys like Michael Cohen, who got convicted of things, and then they went home and were wearing an ankle bracelet. We're literally incarcerating Peter Navarro in a prison for not complying with a subpoena that he's appealing. And yet all these other dudes hang out at home with an ankle bracelet. We let people in through the southern border and tell them to show up 5 years. We call them newcomers, not illegals. I really do wonder if our priorities are completely backwards.
They are. And Navarro is a victim of this. And I'm sorry the Supreme Court allowed this to go forward. I don't know what that thinking was, but it's wrong. It's just simply wrong. But he has no recourse at this point, because obviously this president is not going to commute his sentence. Right. If in office, he probably would commute the sentence, and it would be the right thing to do.
All right, Professor Dershowitz, last question for you. Does he win on appeal, yes or no, Peter Navarro? Does he ultimately... I get he can't get his time back. Does he win?
It's a close question as to whether or not a person who worked with the president has an obligation to resist the subpoena. He should have resisted it in a different way. He should have had his lawyers file a brief. So I don't know whether he's going to win or not, but it's the D.C. courts.
Right.
So we know that the courts are not particularly favorable to Trump people. So I think it's uphill for him to win. But I don't think that should be the criteria. If there's any that he could win, any legal argument, either him or others who face this issue involving not responding to a subpoena, that should be litigated to the very end. No harm if he's a little while longer.
All right. Classes ended. Go by. Get Trump. Professor Alan Dershowitz, and understand these cases more in depth. Also, big issue that we didn't get to today, but what's going on in Israel? He's also the author of The War Against the Jews, a great breakdown of what's happening over there. All must reads. You could spend a lifetime now reading all of his books. Go on to Amazon, get them now. Professor, thanks for being with us. Folks, remember to continue to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Tomorrow, we've got a great panel. Reagan Reese of the Daily Caller is going to join us to talk about election integrity and what she's uncovered at the RNC. Natalie Winters of Bannon's War Room will join us as well. Friday, we've got Peter Schweitzer to tell us what's going on in China. Thank you all for being here. Continue to subscribe. Rumble, YouTube, Apple, Spotify. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Thank you.